More congressional hearings about aid to Ukraine.
I'm in support of a 100% audit. I want absolute transparency on where every dollar has been spent.
Plus, blasts destroy a train depot inside Russian-held territory in southeastern Ukraine.
The explosions at the train depot substations, this caused electricity outages around the city and in the region.
And later in the program, more from the Latvian Minister of Foreign Affairs and the story of a very special Ukrainian airplane and the effort to rebuild it. Today is Thursday, March 30th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Fighting continues near Bakhmut as Western weaponry begins to arrive in Ukraine amid growing talk from Kyiv of a counterassault against Russian forces worn out by a failed winter offensive. All of this as the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency visits the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. Reuters' Zachary Goleman reports.
A GoPro camera mounted on a Ukrainian tank shows the vehicle crawling forward. Its massive cannon then lobs shells downrange. This video, released by the Ukrainian military, claims to show fighting near the shattered city of Bakhmut in the eastern part of the country, where Kyiv's soldiers have fought Russian invaders for months in a battle both sides have described as a meat grinder, but neither has so far managed to win. The tank platoon's commander, callsign Bender, told Reuters his unit fired on Russian positions in support of Ukrainian infantry. Russia has claimed in recent days to have made progress in street-by-street fighting. British intelligence on Wednesday said Ukrainian forces had successfully pushed the Russians back from one of the city's main supply routes. The head of a private Russian mercenary group heavily involved in the Bakhmut operation on Wednesday acknowledged that the fighting had badly damaged his forces.
The enemies of democracy must lose.
Speaking to a summit of democracies sponsored by U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told fellow leaders that they needed to hold firm in the face of Russian aggression. He again pleaded for continued arms and support to help his forces push back Moscow.
This is deciding the fate of not only Ukraine, this is deciding the fate of everyone.
Ukraine has, in recent months, begun to receive a suite of modern military hardware promised by the U.S. and NATO to help Kyiv mount an expected spring counteroffensive. It's unclear where and when that operation might take place. Ukraine on Wednesday struck a railway depot and knocked out power in the Russian-occupied city of Melitopol. But Kyiv hasn't said what weapons it might have used. The city is just at the edge of the range of American-provided HIMARS rocket launchers and within range of newer American armaments. Melitopol is a rail hub and administrative center of the Russian-controlled Zaporizhzhia region. It's south of the Russian-held Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, visited on Wednesday by UN Nuclear Agency Chief Rafael Grossi.
It is very, very important that we agree on the fundamental principle that a nuclear power plant should not be attacked.
Grossi has been pushing for a safety agreement between Ukraine and Russia to protect the facility. Moscow and Kyiv have repeatedly accused each other of shelling the site of the nuclear station over the past year. The sprawling Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant was a prized part of Ukraine's energy network and accounted for around 20% of national power generation before the Russian invasion. It has not produced any electricity since September, when the last of its six reactors was taken offline.
Zachary Goleman of Reuters with that report. Meanwhile, in the U.S., since Russia invaded Ukraine more than a year ago, the United States has earmarked about $113 billion in military and humanitarian aid, making it one of the largest ever assistance packages approved by the U.S. government. Investigators assured lawmakers Wednesday the money is being strictly monitored to ensure it is being used as Congress intended. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson spoke with members of Congress about their concerns.
A recurring plea from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
We're in war and we need money.
$113 billion in American assistance has helped fund the fight against the Russian invasion. a cost many U.S. lawmakers say is worthwhile.
Our effort isn't just about Ukraine and its citizens. This struggle is for democracies around the world and free people standing up to brutal autocrats like Putin.
But there are questions about whether that funding is being spent properly in the chaos of a war.
I'm in support of 100% audit. I want absolute transparency on where every dollar has been spent.
Last year, Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy said the United States will not write a blank check to Ukraine. Three U.S. government investigators overseeing aid told lawmakers Wednesday there are no substantiated instances of fraud to date.
This has got to be reassuring to the American taxpayer that indeed it's trust but verify in every effort. And then let's be real, too. It's in the interest of the people of Ukraine that there not be any misappropriation of equipment, because these are educated people. They realize that that would alienate the American public.
But some Republicans express concern about U.S. aid paying Ukrainian government salaries and pensions, especially as many Americans are struggling economically. Republican Representative Warren Davidson.
How's that not just paying Ukrainian government officials that go shopping in Paris or whatnot?
Investigators say that money is only reimbursed once expenses are approved. Earlier this week, a Senate proposal to unite all Ukraine aid under one investigator failed to pass.
Let's create one government watchdog, not two, not three, not 20, one government watchdog to oversee every cent that is spent on Ukraine, to report back to this Congress and to the American people as to how their hard-earned money is being spent.
A proposal that could be revived when a new round of aid to Ukraine is debated later this year.
Congress is a marketplace of ideas, and that's where debate is good. But I do think the people of Ukraine need our support. They deserve our support.
On Wednesday, the U.S. announced a new $400 million security assistance package for Ukraine. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Russia's top security agency says a reporter from the Wall Street Journal has been arrested on spying charges. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Russia's Federal Security Service has said that Evan Gerskovich has been detained in a city in the Ural Mountains while allegedly trying to obtain classified information. Gerskovich is the first reporter for an American news outlet to be arrested on espionage charges in Russia since the Cold War. Gerskovich covers Russia and Ukraine as a correspondent in the Wall Street Journal's Moscow Bureau. His arrest comes amid bitter tensions between Moscow and Washington over the fighting in Ukraine. The FSB claimed that Gerskovich was acting on U.S. orders to collect information about Russia's military that was a state secret. If convicted, he could face up to 20 years in prison. I'm Karen Chamas.
Explosions rocked the Russian-occupied city of Melitopol. We get the latest from our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
So the mayor of Melitopol, Ivan Fedoriv, confirmed a couple of explosions in different regions of the city. And particularly, he confirmed the explosions at the train depot substations. This caused an electricity outages around the city and in the region as well. This was also confirmed by the Ukrainian Melitopol authorities, who are currently working at the control territory of Ukraine.
Now, Melitopol is in Ukraine's south. It's currently occupied by Russian forces. What's going on there now? What are the Russians doing in the city? And what was this strike attempting to do?
It has a very important location. So it's basically crossroads of Mariupol, Kherson, and Zaporizhia. So this is a very important supply chain for Russian forces at this point. Especially, it became extremely important supply chain after the explosion at the Crimea bridge. So now Russian forces are using this route to supply equipment and supply manpower to the Kherson region. And this is why it's so important. And of course, both Ukrainian forces and Russian forces have a lot of interest in Melitopol, and not only strategic, but also military, because, again, because of its location.
Now, a strike inside Russian-held territory doesn't seem to be very common these days. To do this, Ukrainian soldiers would either need longer-range weapons or perhaps they were able to sneak into that territory. Do we know how this attack happened?
Yeah, mostly for Melitopol, mostly what we hear from official reports that either local activists are working on these explosions or Ukrainian forces, somehow using certain equipment. But mostly, according to official reports, again, this is what we can analyze from all the official sources. This is happening from the inside of these territories.
And that's the latest from Kyiv. Anna Chernikova, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. The United States announced a new financial boost to programs that advance democracy globally, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made a virtual appearance on Wednesday at the Summit for Democracy in Washington. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias reports.
I welcome all of you.
The values of democracy, the rule of law, and respect for human rights are under assault around the world, warned United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on the second day of this year's Summit for Democracy in Washington.
The walls are closing in on civic spaces, constitutional rights are being curtailed, and civil liberties are being eroded. Freedom of expression is in free fall.
As Guterres called on countries to rebuild trust and tackle inequalities, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a boost to several programs that advance democracy.
We plan to add another $690 million for new funding for the presidential initiative over the next 2 years. And over the course of 3 years, my administration intends to work with Congress to commit $9.5 billion across all our efforts to advance democracy around the world.
On Wednesday, Ukraine's Ministry of Defense released footage of soldiers test-driving German-supplied armored vehicles. Well, back at the Democracy Summit, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who participated virtually, reminded the world why supporting his country against the Russian invasion was crucial.
Russia has been at war with all of you for a long time, with the democracies of the world. It fights via disinformation, election interference, espionage, corruption, exporting, cybercrime.
He called again for more weapons that could ensure Ukraine's victory this year. In Moscow, meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov met with his Iranian counterpart, Hussein Amir Abdullahian, to discuss mediation efforts by Tehran.
We discussed Ukraine. We support any initiative that will help stop the fighting.
While visiting Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant on Wednesday, International Atomic Energy Agency Chief Rafael Mariano Grossi also urged Kyiv and Moscow to ramp up talks. Veronica Valderas-Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Edgar Zrinkevics is Minister of Foreign Affairs of Latvia. He visited VOA here in Washington and spoke with Eka Maghaldadze, my colleague from VOA's Georgian service. We heard a bit from him on Wednesday's show. Now we'll take a deeper dive. They spoke about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the need to increase military aid to Ukraine, and Vladimir Putin's statement on tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. The minister also said the West should not fall into the trap of nuclear blackmailing, and that Ukraine should get more weapons.
What do you think, looking at where things stand right now at this point of the war, what are the security challenges for Baltics and for Europe? Where does the Baltic and European security stand right now?
Well, I think that the world is getting more and more complicated. It's not like just after the end of the Cold War, then it was very clear that there is only one a pass, and that's democracy, human rights, and rule of law. Unfortunately, we see that there has been a serious deterioration of democratic standards throughout the world. We see that Russia has actually become a real aggressor, revisionist. And from that point of view, well, I think that there are three major challenges that we need to tackle. One is immediate challenge, that's war in Europe. So to stop Russia, to help Ukraine to liberate its territory, to help Ukraine to win, is in the interests of Europe, the United States, and also the globe. Second, I do believe that it is also very important that we continue implementing all those decisions that we made in Madrid. Mm-hmm. Eastern flank need more troops. We need more weapons. And finally, the most challenging thing is how you actually look at the challenges in our societies, how you fight disinformation and propaganda, how you fight all those, unfortunately, negative effects from social media, where there sometimes are not check and balance system, like in traditional media, and then you get all kind of spread of disinformation. So how to strengthen the resilience of our societies, and that equally applies to the Baltic states, the United States, or any country in the democratic world.
You mentioned Belarus, and yes, we've heard from Vladimir Putin that he's planning to have nuclear weapon systems in Belarus. What do you think this means at this point of the war?
Well, frankly, when it comes from kind of hard security point of view, this is not going to change anything. Russians had nuclear weapons in Kaliningrad, near our borders already before the full-scale invasion in Ukraine. Even we had some suspicions that before the occupation of Crimea, there have been already some movements. So from that point of view, I don't believe that this fundamentally changes the military security. I do believe that on one hand, this is the act of desperation, because you see that the war in Ukraine is not going well for Mr. Putin. So from that point of view, I do believe that this is a bit continuation of nuclear blackmail that we have seen in the last year. This is a bit invitation at the table to discuss what they believe broader strategic issues. But how we should react? In my opinion, this kind of announcement clearly shows that Belarus is not a sovereign country. Mm-hmm. It's actually part of Russian military district. And we need to impose more sanctions on both on Russia and Belarus, simply to make a point that such kind of blackmail, such kind of moves are not going to work.
Edgars Rinkvicks is Minister of Foreign Affairs for Latvia. A huge cargo plane. In fact, it's the heaviest airplane ever to fly, and the one with the longest wingspan. It's called the Maria, which means dream in Ukrainian. Long a symbol of national pride, the Maria was destroyed on the first day of Russia's invasion. Now there is an effort to, quite literally, rebuild the dream. Andrew Kramer is the Kyiv bureau chief for the New York Times and author of a recent article about the plane and plans to restore it.
The Maria was the world's largest cargo plane and the world's largest plane as measured by wingspan. In commercial service. It was created in the late Soviet period, initially to ferry the Soviet version of the space shuttle, the Buran, from its construction site to its launch pad, for example. And then it was used as a cargo airplane. It's almost cartoonishly gigantic. It has 32 wheels, six engines, a very bulbous body, and the nose flips up to open a cavernous belly that can be used for cargo, oversized cargo, such as wind turbine blades, tanks sometimes are transported in it, various heavy industrial items for the oil and gas industry. So it was a commercial airplane. Only one of its kind exists in the world, and it was used by a Ukrainian company to fly cargo around the world. Until the war began in February.
I find it interesting that an airplane could be the source of national pride. Can you explain the sort of groundswell of support for this for a plane?
It's more than just a plane for Ukrainians. It was designed and built in Kyiv, and it's the largest airplane in the world. And wherever it flew, it was always a crowd pleaser at air shows. It was painted in the blue and yellow of the Ukrainian flag, so it was a source of pride in the scientific and industrial prowess of the country. And then also, it was refurbished after the collapse of the Soviet Union when Ukraine was independent and became a symbol of an independent Ukraine. It's also just a very peaceful and useful thing to fly cargo around. So it was something that Ukrainians admired and had become a symbol of the country. It was at air shows. It had a prominent role when Ukraine took part in humanitarian relief operations, for example, would often fly.
So what happened to it when the war started?
Well, they had intended to fly it out to safety, but the departure was scheduled for the afternoon of the 24th, and Russia attacked in the morning and targeted the very airfield where the airplane was based. In the ensuing fighting at the airfield, the airplane was hit by artillery and caught fire, burned, the wings were perforated with shrapnel, and it really looked almost completely destroyed.
So there's an effort now to restore the plane?
That's right. And it's questionable whether this would be a commercially viable operation. It could cost $500 million to restore it. There's only a very specific market for this airplane services. But the company that built it does have an extra fuselage, and it can take spare parts from the damaged plane, salvageable parts, and use them to build a new airplane. And they've already begun design work on this operation.
So if anyone's familiar with old cars, I mean, it rarely makes financial sense to restore something like this. It's more of an emotional exercise. But is this really the best use of resources, given all else Ukraine is going through?
Well, that's the exact question that critics of this the company's plans are saying. President Zelensky said last spring, after the plane was destroyed, "We will rebuild the plane." Now, the name of the airplane in Ukrainian, Maria, means dream. And there's something in the name that they want to rebuild the dream as a symbol of rebuilding Ukraine, getting back on its feet, not accepting the destruction of its country and the destruction of this unique airplane. Critics say this is a fool's errand, that this is going to be tremendously expensive, and the money should go to hospitals, roads, and quite frankly, to weapons for the army right now.
But to clarify, it's a private company that owns the plane. It would be privately financed. This wouldn't be coming out of Ukraine's national coffers, would it?
The company is state-owned, but it is a commercial company. It could potentially tap lending, but I think the intention is to operate with donations. The financing has not been lined up and is not clarified at this point.
Andrew Kramer is the New York Times Kyiv Bureau Chief. Mr. Kramer, thank you for your time today.
Sure. Thank you.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.